Yeah, so I was thinking about just the need that we all have as believers to fight and to fight constantly and to fight fervently and just how a Christianity that is involved with or that has to do with fighting and with really battling every day and understanding that that's normal and understanding that and when we wake up in the morning today, in at least one sense, is going to be a battle, is should be kind of the normal expectation we have. And I don't think I get into, you guys have heard many times, where the kind of Christianity that I've come out of, but it just didn't have anything to do with that. I don't remember ever really thinking about it as a battle, at least not one that actually would involve something that felt like fighting in my own heart. And one of the verses that, if I can find it, that I was thinking about this morning was just the one that in Exodus, I think it's like in Exodus 13. I can almost, I can probably quote it close enough if I can't find it, but yeah, here it is. And then it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by way of the land of the Philistines, although that was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by way of the wilderness of the Red Sea, and the children of Israel went up in orderly ranks out of the land of Egypt. And I just was thinking about how that has, I feel like I can say that that's generally been the case of almost everybody that I know. There definitely is a sense, even right when we begin our journey, that the Lord is changing things, the Lord is judging things, the Lord is doing great works as there was in Egypt. But the real, like, day-to-day battle against the uncircumcised nature, for me at least, didn't come into view right away. There was a time where I felt like the Lord dealt tenderly with my condition and my excitement and my zeal and my things that He allowed to have, I think, maybe have some mixture in them, or even be largely mixture for a while, wanting me to have a little bit of time under my belt, so to speak, of walking with him and believing in him and feeling him near and feeling his presence and being a little bit fed by him and nourished by him and feeling some initial victories. And that was definitely, I think, the way the Lord has dealt with me in my life. But as I've continued to try to follow him, I've found that he didn't always lead me the way that like it's like he always knew that there was a chance. I think he always knows that there's a chance, a large chance, that when people begin to see war, that when his people that are following him begin to feel war, that they will turn back to Egypt. I think that that's I don't think that's written in the Bible just because it was true of that generation. I think it's obviously written in scripture because the Lord knows that the tendency of our hearts is to not want to fight every day and to, as we've talked about in other verses, to send out a delegation and ask for terms of peace when we see that the war is great, when we feel like we have 10,000 that are coming against 20,000. And yet I feel like that I know that that war is inevitable, that's not something, it's not optional. Nobody is going to be able to miss it or escape it or dodge it in any way. It's going to be something that every one of us, if we're serious about wanting to continue on with the Lord, eventually the Lord has to bring us face to face with the Philistine nature in ourselves and teach us how to war. And there's a whole lot of scriptures too, and these were in my mind, but I don't know where they all are, and I'm not going to look for them. But there's a whole lot of Psalms, especially where it talks about where David says, "Teach me to war, teach me to bend a bow of bronze, or make my hands I forget, he doesn't say dexterous, but it's something like that, to make war against the enemy. And all those scriptures and all of that idea sounds really nice when you're reading it about David, or when you're reading it in stories of people who fought that fight and overcame and fought their whole life, and that battle became more and more a victory in their hearts. And reading those stories and hearing those stories and singing songs about those victories, all of that sounds really encouraging and really great. And I think those stories are for us to encourage us. But like, eventually the Lord has to like lead us. Eventually we get around the Red Sea, and or through the Red Sea, and the there are we begin to face things in us that seem to be like impassable and bigger than us, and we feel them to be. And I'm not talking, I'm talking about all kinds of inward things that just are rooted and grounded in us. Things that maybe are not even necessarily clearly evil, but they're there and they oppose the reign of God in our hearts. And sometimes they are clearly evil. They're clearly of a nature that is gross, and you can see it and recognize it. Sometimes they're things that don't feel necessarily gross, but they are self. They come from self. Things like ways of thinking, things like ways of relating to ourselves, things like laziness, things like fear, that have governed us. And the Lord brings us into a place where we engage in a kind of relationship with Him that it seems to change. It seems to change, like the season changes, and there's a lot of what feels like fighting going on in our hearts. And one of the verses that I think I know where it is, that I was thinking about this morning, is I'll just read this little story here. I'm sure we've talked about this before, but it's Elijah and Elisha, and he says, "And it came to pass when the Lord was about to take up Elijah into heaven by a whirlwind, that Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. And then Elijah said to Elisha, 'Stay here, please, for the Lord has sent me on to Bethel.' But Elisha said, 'As the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, I will not leave you.' And so they went down to Bethel. Now the sons of the prophets who were at Bethel came out to Elisha and said to him, 'Do you know that the Lord will take away your master from over you today?' And he said, 'Yes, I know. Keep silent.' Then Elijah said to him, 'Elijah, stay here, please, for the Lord has sent me on to Jericho.' But he said, 'As the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, I will not leave you.' So they came to Jericho. Now the sons of the prophets who were at Jericho came to Elisha and said to him, 'Do you know that the Lord will take away your master from over you today?' And he answered and said, 'Yes, I know. Keep silent. Don't discourage me.'" I added that part. "Then Elijah said to him, 'Stay here, please, for the Lord has sent me on to the Jordan.' But he said, 'As the Lord lives, and as your soul lives, I will not leave you.' So the two of them went on." I mean, the rest of the story is really interesting too, but that's really the part. I mean, then Elijah takes the mantle and rolls it up, strikes the water, crosses the water, and then he says, "So it was when they had crossed over that Elijah said to Elisha," both of those would be pronounced the same in Argentina, by the way, but "'ask, what may I do for you before I'm taken away from you?' And Elisha said, 'Please let a double portion of your spirit be upon me.' So he said, 'You've asked a hard thing. Nevertheless, if you see me when I'm taken from you, it shall be so for you. But if not, it shall not be so.'" Right. Well, you know, he receives the double portion. But the thing that I just find really interesting about this story, and there's other ones too, where some people say they want to follow Jesus, and he seems like he's almost discouraging them, where he says things like, "Oh, you know, foxes have holes, birds have nests, but I don't have anywhere to lay my head," or things like that. I don't think at all that the Lord in this story is trying, really wanted Elisha to stay behind. I don't think that's what we're supposed to see. I don't think it's in the Lord's heart at all to have us stay back in Bethel or stay back in Jericho or stay back in Jordan. I think, though, at least what I feel when I read this story and several others that are like it, or like when another one is when Naomi is telling Ruth and her other daughter, Orpah, to stay back, that she's going to return to her land, but she doesn't have any more sons to give them. So you stay back and go back to your gods and go back to your family. And and Orpah says, "All right, sounds good." And Naomi, or Ruth, sorry, says, "As your God lives and as your soul lives," kind of a very similar thing as what Elisha says here. I won't do it. She tries to talk her out of it like two or three times, and she says, "You know, don't say it again. I'm not leaving you. Only death will part me from you." And that attitude and that way of looking at her following of Naomi back to the land, and Elisha's way of looking at following Elijah here, to me is to me indicative of something of like the nature of this journey, that there's always places, not just one opportunity, not just two opportunities, and really not just three either, even though three is in this story, or three are in the story, but there's always opportunities where we feel like we have a good excuse and a good invitation and a place where we could say that we don't feel wrong or don't feel bad or maybe don't feel the need or don't feel absolutely required, or I don't know what the way to say it is, but to keep going, to keep fighting, to keep pressing on, to get up again and again and again and say, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, speaking to our Elijah, to Christ, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, I will not leave you. And to actually live that way every day, and to actually fight against everything in us that would, because there is something in us, there is something in us that wouldn't, that doesn't, every single day, that doesn't want to fight the journey. There are discouraging feelings, there are discouraging thoughts, there are confusing thoughts, there are desires of the flesh. There are other things that attract our eyes and attract our attention, to which we have to say no. Not just once, not just twice, not just 10 times, not just even 100 times. Sometimes we have to say no to them until that choice disappears from our heart, until there's no choice remaining for us, until there's an automatic yes in that area. And then we find another place in our heart where we have to say no and no and no. You see? Sometimes, again, it's confusion. Sometimes it's we don't understand what's going on. It doesn't make sense. And we have to go on anyway. There's still that same day, there's still an opportunity to say, as the, I don't understand. I don't understand what I'm experiencing, why I'm experiencing it. I don't know why it's lasting so long. I don't know what's going on. I don't have no idea why. Here's another example of when I see this in scripture, where Jesus has all the people there wanting to crown him king, and they're all super excited about how he multiplied a ton of bread and fish, and they're all loving his ministry. And he just turns on them and says, "Eat my flesh and or drink my blood, or you have no life in yourself." He says the most nonsensical thing for them, the most offensive thing, something that appeared to be contrary to the law that all of them believed in, the Mosaic law. You are not allowed to eat blood or drink blood. That's like the he started that law back with Noah in Genesis chapter 9. It carried on through the whole Old Testament. Jesus comes out and just says something that is totally confusing and offensive, and then most of them turn away. And then Peter says, "What are you doing?" And he says, "Are you offended? Are you gonna turn away too?" He doesn't explain. He just says, "What are you gonna do? What are you going to do with that offense and that confusion in your heart? What are you going to do about your interpretation of Genesis chapter 9 that says you must never eat blood. And what I just said to you, what are you going to do with that, Peter? Are you going to turn away? And he doesn't, I mean, I know there's times where he's very like seems to be very sympathetic and loving and tender, like where he tells the woman, you're like, I don't condemn you. I won't throw a stone at you. Go and leave your life of sin. And but then there's also times like that where all he says is, are you offended too? What if you see me go up to where I came from? Is that going to be too hard for you to understand? And that's kind of what's going on here is what I feel here. And I just feel like everybody that's brought along for a while in this journey gets to a place where I'm not saying that there's not a brook to drink from along the way, because there is. There always is a brook to drink from along the way, enough for us to keep going. There's never, he never, I don't think, ever. Well, I know he doesn't. He says he doesn't give us more than we can actually handle that day. But the reason he does it is because there's Philistines running around our heart. The reason he does it is because there's something in us that wants to sit down short of the inheritance, and there's always going to be these opportunities to hear in our heart, stay here please, because I'm going on. And there's always going to be then that opportunity to respond and say, you're right, I feel like I've gone far enough. I'm actually pretty content here in Bethel. Bethel looks like a nice place to stay. Or the Israelites wanting to stop short of going into the promised land. Even though they were willing to fight with them and whatever, they stopped short. And there's always going to be something. This place is really great for cattle. You know, I feel like we can just take our, we'll still be part of you guys. We're still going to be part of the team, but we're going to stop right here and we're going to take our inheritance right here, you know? And I just feel that the Lord intentionally brings us to these places where in our heart, if we want a way out, if we want a plan B, we're going to find one. We're going to be able to find one. That's what I see right here. That's what I see right here is that like there's an opportunity that every one of us has to stop our Christian growth wherever along the way we want to, and we're going to be able to reach for and find some excuse for it. Too hard, too confusing, too much baggage. Nobody's doing it with me. I'm all alone. No, you don't understand what I have to deal with in my own heart and within my own mind. My spouse isn't walking with me. My kids are rebelling against this and they think I'm crazy. I don't know a pastor that is teaching this and helping me every Sunday to walk in what I feel like the Lord is teaching me and requiring of me in my own heart. I mean, there's just tons. I don't understand this verse in the Bible. I don't understand why I felt this way. I don't understand why I'm having, you know, anxiety attacks in my case. I don't understand, whatever. I don't know. There's just one after another. And with it, there's this kind of opportunity. And I'm not trying to say at all, guys, that any of that stuff are, any of those things are like bad excuses. They're all very like legitimate. They feel very legitimate. They feel really strong. But I am trying to say that I think there's something in all of us that can say, that always can say, that can get up the next morning. We only have to be here for like 80 years or something. You know, it's not like forever. We only have to do this for a certain limited amount of time. It's not eternity. It's not 10,000 years. It's not 10 million years. It's like, you know, maybe 60, 70, 80, 90 years, or less or more. I don't know, a little bit more, but not much more. And every day there's just this opportunity to get up and to say again, Lord, as you live, as your soul lives, and as I feel that you're going on, as I can feel that you're not stopping here, I'm not stopping here either. I'm going with you. And to do that again tomorrow. And that's the thing that I always feel. Because even though I can feel that sometimes things are confusing and hard and weird and scary and or maybe boring, or maybe dull, or maybe I feel a time of like numbness. I've had seasons of numbness where I don't feel the urgency that I like to feel in my own heart. I like to feel a sense of urgency because it makes me feel like I gotta run fast and run hard today. I gotta surrender my will today. Sometimes I feel more of like a dullness or a numbness or something that doesn't feel that same urgency. Or maybe the things, the outward things, are just kind of a little bit overwhelming right now, and I'd rather stop and just think about those and focus on those for a few weeks or something, or I don't know, something. But I always feel like he's going on. And that's the thing that I really like about this scripture, is that Elisha just said, look, if you're staying here, I'll stay here. But if you're going on, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, I'm going on too. I'm not going to stop. And that means that we have to fight. That means that our Christianity is going to be these words that we see in the New Testament. It's going to be narrow and difficult. That's what Jesus said. Narrow, which means it means a lot of things to me. It's like you got to kind of turn sideways to get through it. There's not a lot of people that are going to be on the same path. It's not going to allow you to take a lot of stuff with you. I don't know all that narrow means, but at least means those things. And difficult means difficult, I think, pretty clearly. Paul says it's a battle. He says it's a fight. He says it's a race. He says it's difficult. He says through many tribulations, you have to enter into the kingdom of God. Jesus said that in this world, you're going to have tribulation. Don't expect anything different. Don't expect a world of outward prosperity and good, happy things all the time. There are good and happy things, but don't expect that to be like your portion every day, because you're not here to have your portion on that side of. You're not here to stop in Bethel or in Jericho or in the Jordan. You're not here to stop. You're here to keep going, you know? And I'll give you what you need along the way to keep going. I'll give you the weapons you need to fight. I'll give you the path. I'll give you the way that you have to walk. I'll show all of that to you. And I'll never give you more than you can bear in one day. There'll always be a way of escape, which is by clinging to me and staying close to me. You'll never ever find yourself without enough grace to follow me every single day. But you are going to have it feel like a fight. You're going to find yourself fighting against yourself. You see, that's the thing. If you were fighting only against another person, that would be easier. Because then you'd have all of yourself on the same team. But you don't have all of yourself on the same team. You have part of yourself on the wrong team. And that part of yourself is called the flesh. It's a nature in man that has to be crucified, ignored, rejected, put off, turned from, and it comes up a lot. That's the other verse, or the other one of the other verses I was thinking about this morning, is the very last verse in Romans 7, which always, honestly, it used to bother me. I didn't like it because I didn't understand it, and I think maybe I understand a little bit of it now, but I didn't like the way he said it in the present tense. He says, "Oh wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death? I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord, so that," and this is the part I didn't like because of the present tense, "with the mind I serve the law of God, but with the flesh the law of sin." He doesn't say, "With the mind I serve the law of God, but with the flesh I served the law of sin." You see what I'm saying? He says that with the flesh he serves the law of sin, and with the mind he serves the law of God. And why am I bringing that up? I'm bringing it up because as long as we live in the flesh, that's what we'll serve. You see, he doesn't ever, and that's what he goes on to say in chapter 8. He doesn't give you a way to change the flesh or to make it not want to serve the law of sin. He gives you a way to overcome it, to not live in it, to not yield to it by walking in the spirit. He gives you another leader. He gives you another guide. He gives you another power. He gives you grace. And that grace can cause you to no longer walk according to the flesh, but according to the spirit. But he doesn't take away the nature. It doesn't change the nature of flesh. And as long as the flesh has room to rise up in us, as long as it can give us thoughts and desires, those are going to be thoughts and desires that we need to reject, that we need to fight against, that we need to keep under, that we need to put in subjection to the grace of God working in our spirits. And that means a fight. And I'm not saying it's a fight that we can't overcome. I believe it is a fight that we can overcome, but I also believe it's a fight. And it's a daily fight. And I believe that's what Paul is saying in 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Therefore, I run thus, not with uncertainty. Well, I'm going to go back a little bit. You not know that those who run in a race, I know we read these verses all the time, but those who run in a race all run, but one receives the prize. Run in such a way that you may obtain it. He's not saying that only one will receive the prize, but he's saying that we have to run in the way as though we have to live our lives running in a way as though there were only one gonna live, win the prize. And everyone who competes for the prize is temperate or self-disciplined, it says in other versions, in all things. Now they do it to obtain a perishable crown, but we do it for an imperishable crown. What do? We abstain. We are self-disciplined. We are temperate in all things. We're careful about what we feed in ourselves. We're careful because that's what temperate is. It's you don't give something too much. We usually use the word temperate nowadays, at least I think when it comes to like alcohol with temperance, like don't drink too much because then you'll lose your ability to make judgments and you'll do things you regret. But the idea is like you don't give flesh more than you need, absolutely need to. You don't give the outward man more than you need to. You're temperate, disciplined. You abstain from overindulging, overfeeding, overstimulating the part that you have to fight against, the nature that you have to fight against every day. If you're stimulating it and tickling it and giving it food every day, that's going to make the battle extremely hard. It's going to make it really hard to run a race and or to box in a ring when you're when one hand is punching your enemy and the other hand is punching yourself. Anyway, he goes on. Therefore, I run thus, and here's the running race again, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection. Discipline my body and bring it into subjection. There's a nature in our fleshly man that needs to be disciplined and kept under subjection. And that is just part, it's not the only aspect of our fight. There's a lot of inward things too. I mean, a whole lot of inward things. But I guess just the language, I mean, things that don't have to do with the natural body too. There, like I said, there's all kinds of confusion and fears and whatever. Doubts and desires and things that aren't necessarily directly linked to the outward body, but the way that Paul describes his life here as an apostle, I discipline my body, bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. All of that, I guess, just to kind of present to your hearts again. Once again, that there's a need in here in this journey to fight and to understand that there's a battle and to not be surprised if we feel days are going by and weeks are going by and months are going by and years are going by and we're still in a fight. We're still in a battle. There was a long battle. Between David, it says, a long battle between David, the house of David, and the house of Saul. And there is going to be a long battle in all of us. And I just wanted to say that's kind of what I'm feeling is like the need to just accept that, to know that, to have a fighting mentality. Paul got to the end of his life. I was thinking about these two verses this week because they came up in one of our meetings, but he got to the end of his life, and two times he said he seems to be kind of like celebrating the fact that he had kept the faith He had fought the good fight. Another time he says he fought the fight of faith. Another time he says he kept the faith and fought the good fight, or something like that. There's two places. Both one's in 1 Timothy, one's in 2 Timothy, but I'm not quoting them exactly. But it's just interesting to me that Paul got to the end of his life and he saw it like a victory of keeping and staying in faith. That's what I feel about this story about Elisha and Elijah. He got to the end and he got the double portion and he said, I kept the faith. I didn't stop. I had a lot of opportunities. I had what felt like to me opportunities given to me by Elijah to stop, to stay short. I had a bunch of prophets coming up to me in every city and saying, you don't need to follow him. The Lord's taking him today. Stay back. Don't, there's no point. He's going away. Discouragement on every side. It didn't start, that wouldn't have been something I would have thought much about at the beginning of this race, but it is something that I think about a lot now. The need for, as we talked about again, I think it was Thursday night, we talked about patience. The verse in James where he says, count it all joy when you face temptations of every kind. Or it says, and that's what the King James says. I think the other, the New King James says trials, but the word is actually temptations. Count it all joy because every single one of those things, every one of those trials, those temptations, every time that Elijah says to us, you can stay here if you want to, or Jesus says, are you offended with that? Because you can stay here if you want to. Or when Naomi says to Ruth, why don't you stay back here? I don't have anything that you're looking for. And it all makes sense to our natural mind that it all seems very logical for us to stay put, to stay where we are, to not keep fighting, to not have another day of just kind of fighting against ourselves and against the enemy and against the world and against the flesh. It all makes a lot more sense. And you see a whole lot of Christians that are taking their inheritance on the other side of the Jordan, and they've got a lot of cattle and they've got a lot of nice stuff. And you think, well, why don't I just do what they're doing? It doesn't, we're all going to heaven anyway, aren't we? Kind of that idea, And it just makes so, there's so many times in our life where it makes sense to not actually wake up in the morning and just want to say, no, as God lives and as your soul lives, Jesus, I'm not, if you're not staying here, I'm not staying here. And to go again one more day like that, and to have patience, have that work going on in our hearts, because that's what patience is. It's that perfect constant clinging and waiting in the right path. It's holding the right path. It's every day having temptation bring you two paths and you patiently holding one of them. You see, over and over again. It's not just letting time go by. You can let time go by on the wrong path, but patience always lays hold of the right path and chooses it and waits in it. It waits on the Lord and in the way of his judgments. It holds fast. It holds the course. It says every day. It says every day that same thing. No, as the Lord lives, and as I want to live in where the Lord lives. And as I want to live where your soul lives, Elijah, I'm sticking with this path and I'm waiting right here. And the end result of it is the double portion of his spirit. The end result of it is exactly all the promises and blessings of God that we read all throughout scripture. But the way is a battle. Again, I don't want, if anyone in this room or listening is not in a time right now where you're feeling that battle very much, you're more feeling like excitement and joy and like you're waking up and from a long dream and the Lord seems so close and so good. Enjoy that, and walk with the Lord in that. And don't let the Lord lead you wherever you are right now in the way that he's leading you. Praise God for his kindness and for the times where he doesn't lead us straight into battle. But don't also don't be surprised if that's you, if things take a turn towards a more difficult path, when things start to feel more narrow and more difficult and harder, and it begins to feel more like a race and more like a fight. Don't be discouraged then either. There's times of refreshing that will come, but all that the Lord is doing in those times of difficulty is wearing away the fallen nature from your heart. All he's doing is giving you many opportunities to turn from it and to let it waste away from you, fall away from you, just like the generation that wouldn't enter into the promised land, just waiting, just letting the years go by while all of that falls away and dies, so that what does go into the promised land can actually enjoy it and accept it. That's all the Lord's doing. Every dealing of the Lord that has to do with battling and fighting and warfare and difficulty, all of it is only to ever take from you what you can't keep anyway. That's the kindness of the Lord in everything he does. He's never done anything hard for no reason. There's never been anything hard he's done in your life that doesn't have some good possible outcome. Nothing. And if we can just cling to him and fight with him and hold on to him and know that there's nothing today that's going to be more than I can bear. If I looked at the whole next week, maybe I'm overwhelmed and I can't handle it. If I look at the whole next month, I'm going to quit. But if I just look at today and I just look at the grace that's available today, then I can keep going. And if we can just fight that way, you'll get to another season. You'll get to the end of the race, and you'll be able to say with Paul, with a big smile on his face, "I fought the fight. I kept the faith. I finished the race. I'm done. I'm done fighting. It's all rest from now on. It's all joy from now on. I'm laying this whole thing down that I've been fighting against, this whole nature, what the residue of it that I have to watch against, because I believe Paul obtained a great measure of perfection, but I believe he, if in the flesh, he had to stay watchful and stay careful, and even then, he had at the end, he laid that down. There was no more need to be, I believe, watchful and careful, and he laid down that body. Well, anyway, I'm maybe guessing a little bit on what he was feeling, but it does seem like he said things that have that flavor to them, and he finished his race. And we're gonna have to finish ours. So those are just some of my thoughts this morning, and you guys can share what you want to share. Let me turn on the.
I just think like I've had experiences over the years that all fit well with what how you described, especially early on in the journey. It just really felt like the Lord, I don't know, maybe like the miracles that happened in Egypt or something. Like it's so captivating and this is amazing. And well, how did I miss all of this? And there's this reality that of a God that is like can captivate my whole attention, and then you get, as you describe, to a place where you realize that the flesh is, it's kind of like it's not, it's something to be contended with. And there's a deep, we've talked about over the years, there's these forests of fleshy things that have grown up in our hearts and that the Lord has a lot to do. And then you kind of come back to this thing that's grown up in your heart. You realize, wow, that wasn't entirely done with. For some time I was drawn away from that, and but now I realize this is something that has been there a long time, and I have to deal with it. And there's some discouragement in realize, like in falling. And I've read First John so many times because I have found myself in a place where I'm like, I need an advocate. I need a mediator, because I can't do this on my own. And but I guess my like kind of when you describe like the fight, it's when I think of like David, he seems to be victorious like all the time, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't always feel that victorious. I mean, I feel like there's a fight for sure, but oftentimes I feel like I fail. And not all the time. I just feel like my journey's been such a, there's been some roller coasters kind of thrown in there of, you know, yeah, like I said, it's like kind of another, maybe another question, I suppose, of how is this fight always a victory? Like, was Paul's fight always a victory? Like, what is the fight? Does the fight consist of winning every day, and there's a fight every day, but I don't feel like I've won every day.
Just, I was like thinking about a couple things. I'll keep this short, but sort of, I guess, responding to Rachel's question in a way too, even though she gets to hear my thoughts all the time. Like Jason, like I would start by like totally acknowledging that like people are quite different, and I think that's actually like an important thing. I sort of have this theory that we all start out kind of imagining that everyone's sort of like us, you know, we kind of project ourselves on everyone. It's like natural to do so. You only like know how you experience things and how you experience the world. But I think if we let like experience and the Lord have their way with us, we'll come to see that there's like real differences between people, and that's something that I think I've begun to learn a little bit, partially through my kids, my family. I think the Lord helping me, and I've come to like really, really understand kind of at a real deep level that there are differences in the way we experience things and the way we function in the world. Now it doesn't take, this is kind of like a theme with me lately, is kind of like hanging on to two things at the same time. That doesn't, I feel strongly or more strongly than ever that like the truth is the truth, or like it says in that one scripture, like God be true and every man a liar. Like those two things aren't in opposition, I believe, at all. But like the core sort of idea that came to me is like, I was just going to say that it's really comforting, I think. This is a scripture, Rachel, that like I think you brought up last night when we were talking with the family. Maybe it was Harry, I can't remember. But the what Jesus said about the widow giving the widow's mite, I think is like, it's one of several places where I think the Lord sort of shows us that he, far better than we, he understands this reality that like we're in different situations with different capacities and different abilities. I think the parable of the talents is like another one. But that little story where Jesus sits there with his disciples trying to teach them this lesson, and they're watching all the people put these large amounts in, and he says, you know who really gave something right there was the one you'd least expect. Because that other guy before the widow might have literally put in 1,000 times as much as the widow did, but Jesus saw and cared about, like he knew the, I don't know like how to say it, but he knew the capacity, you could say. You know, he knew it, and he saw it, and he called it out, and he wanted his disciples to think like he thought, you know, that the issue wasn't sort of the absolute size of what the person gave, because that means nothing.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like, if I had to answer what you were trying to get at, Rachel, I would say that I think there are definitely people in the world who they're more naturally, like discipline comes easier to them. Like maybe you could say fight comes easier to them. Maybe persistence comes easier to them. All those sorts of things. They build up routines that strengthen them in the appearance of self-discipline and faithfulness and all sorts of things like that. They get used to things. They find some energy from that that kind of goes with the current of maybe it's their brain, maybe it's their upbringing, maybe it's their experiences or lack of traumatic experiences. Who knows what all the ingredients that go into that? But I think there are people that, so to speak, are kind of like that, and they might give $1,000 into the treasury, and they might be completely coasting, in the sense that the Lord might look at them and say, "You didn't fight today." And or you could use an analogy of like exercise, you know, like you could have somebody who has a very healthy body, is gifted with a good constitution, and has always loved exercise, and they can go do a 2-hour workout in the gym, and they didn't press forward, they didn't push anything, they didn't gain any ground that day. They just like were on autopilot. And you could say, and then you got this other person who's like a paralytic, like or something, or recovering from some injury, or has some syndrome, or who knows? And like all they can go is they can sit there and like I think of people like recovering from horrible surgeries or something, and they go into physical therapy and they're trying to like lift a 1 pound weight, and they're dying trying to do it, And like what I think the parable of the widow's mite sort of shows is like people are completely fooled by the outward appearance, but the Lord is not. And it, if like you were to say to me like I'm a quitter, I can't ever do anything, I can't fight, and people around me just seem like they can do so much, they can pray so long, they can read the Bible, they can X, Y, Z, I would say like if there are people like that, the Lord might look at them and say, hey, they have an abundance, they didn't even give. Yeah, I see the $1,000 it went in, but that's nothing to me. What really impresses me is this person over here who had nothing. And so I would like say to someone in that case, like, I think we can all feel whether we've put like a mite in today, And so if I'm a person who's like pretty disciplined, if my routines help me, if I'm the gym rat, like I can lay down in bed and know that I just coasted through my workout. Or I can lay in bed and say, like, I took a step today with effort and pain. A little step. Maybe it was only a, because like somebody who's like a super strong is not going to gain some, 10 pounds of mass in one day, but he can take a tiny step and push past where he is. And I think we can each sort of feel that. And what's really neat about the Lord is that's the only thing he seems to care about. And so I would say to the person who can't do anything, you can still feel whether, like, in whatever arena and whatever ability, no matter how stupid it looks to anybody, did you fight a little bit? Did you throw in your two mites or not? And you got to just completely get rid of how the world assesses things and how you would like to assess something, and just kind of feel, did my will fight a little bit beyond what it wanted to today? And I guess that those are the thoughts that came to my mind.
I just felt like I needed to add what I was feeling too about this conversation was like the essence of the fight is the same for all of us. It's the dying to flesh and walking in the spirit. And it doesn't matter how we're naturally constituted, or how our experiences of this life have shaped our personality. We still all have that same fight of putting that all under the cross, letting him sort it out for us, and following where he's leading us.
I know I was kind of getting on in time, but I just wanted to share this real quick. I was kind of driving here, so I didn't hear everything, but I really appreciated the question and all the answers. And what was kind of coming to my mind, what kind of was seeming really clear to me, was that, I think the Lord is waiting for us to come to the end of ourselves and to reach for Him. And I was thinking about this as like this, it's like this race, right? That's a picture that Paul uses, but I was picturing it as like this, like we're all dropped off at the starting line. And then and I think we can be different people at different times, meaning like we experience different things. Sometimes we just kind of hang out at the starting line and don't even start the race. And there's a whole bunch of people there just picnicking and hanging out, like Jason was talking about, people who are super comfortable. And then there's hopefully we become a person who wants to run the race, and we start running, and there's all these obstacles, and like some people like come up against like the first obstacle, and it's like, It is just like they just like stop. They bang into it, and then like a bunch of other people like seem to clear it, and they keep running. And as they go, they keep bumping into obstacles. And I also have this picture of like God giving all of us like a little bag, and inside of it there's different tools. And some people have shoes, and some people have gloves, and but at the end of the day, everybody gets to an obstacle that's too big to get over. And I think then for the trick, the miracle is for us to like realize and that we're not getting over this obstacle, and to look up and to reach up for the Lord to take us, because the race isn't even in that plane. The race is in another direction, and all of the obstacles just serve to have us look to Him. And as you guys were talking, I definitely was thinking about the widow and her mite too. But I was thinking about Peter. And how like Jesus is telling the disciples that, listen, like the people from this world are coming, and they're gonna take me, and they're gonna kill me, and you all are gonna be scattered. You know what I mean? And Peter is just like, he's like, you know what? If everybody else is scattered, I'm never gonna leave you. I'm gonna fight with you to the end. And we all know the story. He thinks he understands what this race is, and that he has what he needs to finish it, but like that story is so precious, because like the Lord knows exactly what needs to happen in Peter. You know what I mean? And so like he says, you're going to deny me three times, like in the next little chunk of time here, you're going to deny me three times. He's like, no way, it's not going to happen, right? And then we know he does, and then later Jesus shows back up again, and he keeps asking him, do you love me? And finally, Peter says, "Lord, you know all things," and that, and then he, that was the thing, I think, that like Peter doesn't know, but the Lord knows, and the Lord knows what is the thing that's in the way of us reaching to Him. And it's not just like one thing; it's a bunch of things that are in the way for me reaching to the Lord. But I just feel like that's the thing, is that like the race is a different race than we think. It's in a different plane. And we do not have of ourselves, we do not have what is necessary to run it. And there's only one that does. And he's just waiting for us to turn to him once, twice, and 1,000 times, just to continue to turn to him for the life that is needed, the strength that is needed, the light that is needed.